Green Zone. Jamie and Locker. Jamie's still off. We're adding that one to our Green Zone Positivity playlist. Still taking your requests. What do you want to hear? It's got to be upbeat. It's got to have sort of a positive slant to it. 877-332-8255. We're trying to combat all the crazy news that's happening in the world right now with the Green Zone Positivity playlist. So we're looking for your requests. Again, 877-332-8255. I don't mean to dwell on this, but if at any point anybody can get me audio of the I'm out of toilet paper 911 call, for some reason I need to hear that. I shouldn't make fun of it, but all right, couple of things on the program today to give you a heads up on. Curtis Hunt, he's the general manager of the PA Raiders. They made a big move. Looks like they're pushing their chips all into the middle and going for it this year. Tom Thayer played with the Chicago Bears back in 1985, won a Super Bowl. We'll chat with him about that Bears-Packers match. That is only the third. This weekend will be the third time these two teams have met in the postseason. I had to double check that. Britton and I were looking at that going in the Green Zone Lounge going, what? That can't be a thing. And it is. This is only the third time. One win for the Bears, one win for Green Bay. We will actually get a visit from Britton Gray, our Riders reporter, because we want to talk about the CFLPA, CFL club report cards that just dropped. Some interesting conversation revolving around where teams stay in Edmonton. More on that. And then John Shannon. We'll have an interesting conversation with him. I was listening to his 100% podcast, and him and Darren Millard had an interesting conversation about current players in the NHL that would make a Shorzy team. Actually, start thinking about that. If you have anybody that you think should be on like a all-Shorzy team that currently play in the NHL, I want your list. 877-332-8255. Is Marchand on that list? Are the Tkachuk brothers on that list? Probably. Is it the hair? Is it a lack of a tooth? Is it the chirps? What is it? All right. Again, who's on your NHL all Shorzy team? 877-332-8255. Stealing that from John Shannon. But as always, we get the program going with the starting lineup. McDavid and the Oilers, big win over the Preds last night.
Moving it to Bouchard. McDavid cuts left to the net. Scores! Connor McDavid breaks in on UC Soros. Scores! Hopkins a tight trap. Connor McDavid. The 14th of his career.
That's the three goals. One of them actually was a penalty shot goal from Connor McDavid last night. He is at the top of the league right now as far as points go, one ahead of McKinnon. I believe he has 75 points, and McKinnon has 74 points, although McKinnon has a couple of games in hand. Nuge set up Connor's hat-trick goal in the third, which was his 500th career assist. Nuge has 782 career points. He's seventh on the list of all-time scoring and points leaders for the Oilers, 124 points behind Glenn Anderson. So it's going to take him a bit of time to get to that top five if he does. Of course, Dreisaitl and McDavid are ahead of him as well. The bad news right now, just throwing it out there, not that it's ever good news when you're talking about Edmonton goaltending, the Oilers placed Tristan Jarry back on long-term injured reserve yesterday. They have some cap issues, so it may be more about that, but Knobloch said that he expects the goaltender to be out a couple more weeks, so that's the move there. Up next for Edmonton, they'll be visiting the Jets, who are in trouble this year. That'll happen on Thursday. And are the Leafs back?
Back to cross. Robertson scores! Glad couldn't find it. It'll be play to Stetzer. Scores! Tipped in front. And the Leafs have a 2-0 lead. From Mikkola coming out in front. Nice! Powers his way. Back in front. What a goal! Austin Matthews from Matthew Nice. He'll send it ahead. Bobby McMahon. Empty net. And Zylason.
You know what? At the beginning of the season, I had commented with Marner gone that I thought that the Leafs would respond. And the team that I saw last night is the team that I thought that they would put in front of everybody this year. And they're starting to roll. Matthews Nice, he looked good last night. He had a goal and assist, and he was dominant. Austin Matthews has figured out how to play without Marner. 11 points in his last five games. The final there, if you missed it, Panthers won, Leafs for the Panthers, out shooting the Leafs 32-23. So they got goal lead last night. This was the Panthers' first visit back to Toronto since hammering the Leafs 6-1 in that game 7 of their second round playoff series in May last year. Toronto has won both meetings this season against the Panthers. Panthers do not look the same. And that was my other prediction, was they weren't going to make the playoffs. Although the Leafs, the Sabres, and the Panthers are all just sitting there right outside of a playoff spot. So it's going to be a really, really fun finish to the Eastern Conference in the NHL as we close in on the playoffs here, more than halfway through the season. Panthers will visit Montreal on Thursday, and the Leafs visit the Flyers on Thursday. And the crack, what is going on with Seattle?
Here come the Kraken. Berkeley Catton lays it back for McCann. Catton shot. He scores! Berkeley Catton has his first goal in the National Hockey League. Catton gains entry beautifully. He's got it. He hits the... No, he didn't! He hit pay dirt. Berkeley Catton has his first two-goal game in the National Hockey League, and that was a beautiful goal.
You know what? Last night, they won again. They are at the top of the Pacific right now with the Oilers and the Vegas Knights. Big win for them. Seattle 7 and Boston Bruins 4. And that was local boy, Berkeley Catton. He scored his first two NHL goals last night. Took 28 games to get the first one, and then it didn't take him much longer to get that second one. Berkeley is obviously from Saskatoon. This is his first year in the NHL, and a lot of people talking about his play and liked what he's been bringing to the table, but it's been a little bit slow to produce. I have a feeling, though, that now that he's gotten a taste for that, we're going to see more of it. He was on the World Juniors team last year and actually would have been eligible to play this year. The Kraken are third in the Pacific right now, only a point back of the Oilers, two games in hand. Up next, Seattle will be hosting the Wild tomorrow night. And the Prince Albert Raiders, looks like they're going all in.
Nice pass. Great pass. Brayden Cooks walks in and shoots, scores! T.J. Ginla puts it on a tee for Brayden Cooks, and it's 2-0 Canada.
Feeds it back for Fairhoff, and a quick shot. Cooks scores!
Scoring binge continues in Canada-Finland games. It's 2-1, less than 5 minutes in.
Out of everybody that was part of that trade, Brayden Cootes is by far the biggest name. He was at the World Juniors tournament in Minnesota this year. Those were the two goals that he scored. But I thought his impact in that series, in that tournament, was significant. I actually didn't mind him at the start of the season. He played up with the Canucks. He's a first-round pick from last year, and he played with the big club, 15th overall. And I thought he looked good. I thought there was a chance that he actually could stick around. He comes from the Seattle Thunderbirds, and he will help the Prince Albert Raiders take a run at the Memorial Cup this year. The trade included 12 pieces, so it was a big one. The WHL trade deadline is tomorrow. We might get a couple more trades. Again, Britton and I in the Green Zone Lounge earlier kind of took a look at who might be in the conversation for trades in the WHL. And I don't know if we're going to see a lot of action, but obviously the Raiders making some significant moves and taking a run at things here. We'll have a chat with Raiders GM Curtis Hunt coming up here in just a bit. And all eyes, not just on Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift's wedding and where it might be. I hear it's Rhode Island. I can't believe I actually know that. But also a big conversation about whether or not he's going to come back and play with the Chiefs next year.
Now that the season is over, what is next for the Big Yeti?
Man.
Trav? You want to tell us all of your personal endeavors?
Yeah, every season ends for me. I put my feet up and I just be a human.
Yeah.
Just being a regular human for a couple weeks, maybe a month or so, and trying to figure out what I'm going to do next in terms of my future in football. You know, I've talked to a few people in the facility already, you know, having the exit meetings and everything, and they know where I stand, at least right now. And there's a lot of love for the game that's still there. And I don't think I'll ever lose that. It's a tough thing to navigate, but at the same time, if my body can heal up and rest up, and I can feel confident that I can go out there and give it another 18, 20, 21 week run. I think I would do it in a heartbeat. So, I think right now it's just finding that answer and seeing how the body feels after this game and kind of when it all settles down.
I'm confused. So you're not already coming back?
We're all confused. By the way, thank goodness we have a weekly update on what Travis Kelce is thinking with his New Heights podcast. And I know that sarcasm sometimes has trouble translating on the radio, so I will say it out loud. That was me being sarcastic. Travis Kelce is 36. This coming year would be his 14th season in the league. I don't think it finished the way he wanted to. My guess, my prediction is, and I go back and forth on this, is that I think he probably will come back. But I think it is very, very much tied to the health of Patrick Mahomes, who obviously ended his season with a pretty traumatic injury. And the possibility of him coming back and taking snaps at the beginning of the next season, I don't know. You can't be surprised anymore. There's a lot of changes in the way these athletes rehabilitate. But, yeah, we'll keep an eye on that, obviously. And if you are curious, the wedding location rumors right now are Ocean House on Rhode Island for, oh, my good Lord, I can't believe that's even a thing. Okay, the CFLPA club report cards just dropped, like, literally an hour ago. I'll do a quick little top-line review of the riders. That's up next. Surprisingly, it's not that bad. There's one thing that's highlighted, but we'll get to that in a bit. 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. There we go. The Green Zone. Unstoppable. See ya. I'm Locker. A Nihilist program again today. He's off for the rest of the week. The CFL PA club report cards just dropped. They're always kind of fun to take a look at. This is the players grading the team and the coaching staff and the facilities and the food and the travel and la da 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 da. They do this in the NFL. Actually, there is a conversation right now with the NFL and the NFLPA about whether or not they should continue this whole process, which is interesting because the NFL does not like to be judged, especially by its players. In the CFL, last year there was some interesting things. And this year, the one thing that jumped out, and I'll do a top line of Saskatchewan here quickly, but the one thing that jumped out was the accommodations when visiting teams stay in Edmonton. A lot of comments about that. And I actually did a little bit of digging on that. More with that when we have Britton Gray, our Riders reporter, on here on the Green Zone a little bit later. This is the top line Saskatchewan Rough Rider comments. Issues with community appearance money. Issues with multiple players. Appearances were not offered at the rate expected. Great improvements in nutrition, coaching, family events, strength training, so many improvements. Strength and conditioning staff really leveled up. So positive for the most part with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And if you take a look at the report cards for the other teams, Saskatchewan stacks up there, probably at the top of the list with Hamilton and Montreal. And again, we'll review that a little bit more on the program a little bit later. Right now, the one-minute drill with Britton Gray.
The provincial curling playdowns will continue today in Melville. In the Bungie Prairie Pinnacle, Penny Barker and Ashley Tevenot remain undefeated at the tournament ahead of the afternoon draw. At the Sasstel Tankard, Rylan Kleider and his rink beat the Knapp rink to remain the only undefeated team. The winners will head to the Brier and Scotties respectively. The Montreal Canadiens have a chance to gain some ground on their Atlantic Division rivals tonight. The Habs will entertain the Calgary Flames in one of five NHL games on the schedule. Montreal is 2 points behind Detroit and 3 back of Tampa Bay. The Red Wings and Lightning are idle. The Ottawa Senators will visit Utah. And the Toronto Raptors will try to extend their winning streak to 3 games tonight in Charlotte. Toronto is 4th in the NBA's Eastern Conference standings, while Charlotte is in 12th place. The Hornets have only 13 victories this season, but are coming off a 27-point win over the powerhouse Oklahoma City Thunder on Monday. That's your Green Zone Sports. I'm Britton Gray.
Prince Albert Raiders made a huge trade yesterday. Up next on the Green Zone, we'll chat with Curtis Hunt, the Prince Albert Raiders general manager. That's next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. The Green Zone, Jamie and Locker. Again, Jamie not around. And that one is definitely going. Kelly Clarkson, stronger. That one's definitely going on our Green Zone positivity playlist for the new year. 877-332-8255. If you want to add to the list, I'll play your song for you as well. Right now, after a blockbuster trade yesterday, we are joined by the general manager of the Prince Albert Raiders, Mr. Curtis Hunt. Thank you for your time today, my friend.
Hello, Locker. You got it. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. Raiders making some big moves yesterday. Coots is probably the most recognizable name on the list. 12 pieces moving. Braden, what was it about his game that you guys liked that you decided to push all the chips in on this one?
Well, there's the list is shorter of what we don't like, and that's nothing. This young man is just a complete player. I would call him, you know, a 200-foot player. He's got an elite skater. He can play in traffic. He can defend, kill penalties. He's an all-situation guy. And then he's a great person, and I think it's going to be a good fit for us. We're excited to have him join us after a little bit break here after the juniors and representing his country. And to us, he was the best player available in this year's deadline.
So the deadline tomorrow, and I'm wondering, just like everybody else, I'm guessing you were watching the World Juniors. Was that sort of the nail in the proverbial coffin that made up your mind, his play at the World Juniors? Because I thought he looked really good. Only got 2 goals, but 5 assists, 7 points. But I thought his play stood out.
Not really. This is a player we've liked from the beginning of the year, and when Bill and I started talking about some of the options when sometime before Christmas, his name did come up. And then it was just a matter of what were our needs and what could he bring to our group. So we always knew he was an elite player. You don't start in the National Hockey League without obviously the ability to skate a certain skill set, and of course attention to detail, because at that level it's more about, especially a young player, what you do without the puck than you do with it.
You know, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought up Vancouver, and I'm curious, when you guys grab somebody like a Braden Coots, and you grab somebody that not only is playing in the World Juniors tournament with, you know, another 20-plus kids across the country, so he's one of the best prospects in the country, but also has the possibility of cracking an NHL lineup, I guess you can't be making decisions based on what Vancouver Canucks might do with him. But there's no chance he's going to go back up, eh?
I wouldn't anticipate that, but you know what? The NHL operates at their level, and it's the greatest league in the world. So, you know, it would be disappointing, but from our perspective, you know what? That's the way it goes. Every kid wants to play there. I was that kid at one point in time and would have jumped at it, and we'd be excited for him if it happened.
So, Curtis, you probably, you know, when you got guys that stick around for a long time, they fit in the locker room, the coaching staff, you know, gets to know these guys. It must be tough to let a guy go like Ethan. And listen, I know you got a job to do, but there's some history with this kid, right?
Well, absolutely. Like we drafted Ethan. I recruited him. I signed him. You get to know his family. You watch him develop as a, you know, as a U18 player in Winnipeg. He played with the Bruins. You know, he comes in. You see him play his first game. You see him get his first goal. A lot of milestones throughout that process, and even for Ethan, having, you know, he had his share of NHL interviews as well. Wasn't drafted, but that doesn't really mean anything. That's just a moment in time. So, a tough guy to move on from. We have good people here. Ethan is one of them, or was one of them, and he's a guy they targeted. And I think, you know, when you get past the emotion and you look at this practically, I think it was going to be tough for Ethan to get off of our fourth line as an 18-year-old, and he's going to get a new opportunity. And you certainly, Seattle isn't throwing in the towel either. They acquired young Schmidt, who's a dynamic forward with 40 goals in our league. So, you know, it's going to be a good run for him as well, and we wish them the best. And like all the tweets you say, we're as appreciative for his services here as anybody.
Curtis, you guys are, again, you're a wagon again this year, the Prince Albert Raiders at the top of the conference last season. Again this year, you're nipping at the top of it again. And does that give you confidence to make moves like this, just based on how these kids are responding to the to what you guys are putting in front of them?
You know, that's a good question, and it's been asked me a couple times. So, you know, you start the year and you're optimistic. We had some new faces. The change in rules allowed us to bring Max Heisey in, who's been just a fantastic surprise and a San Jose draft pick. And we had, I thought, what was a great core with our 20-year-olds, Orrin Dubé, Christensen, a young defenseman touted in the top 10, and Daxon Rudolph. And you think you got a real nice core, and then, bang, our European players have been outstanding. Obviously, the fans know Orsalak now because of that beautiful Raider mask on that Czechia
jersey. Yeah.
Maybe
man, he was really good in the World Juniors.
They don't like him because of the semifinal game, but certainly we're proud of him. That was a hard one for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're not really sure. You know, you think you're going to be real competitive. You think, yeah, I think we're a playoff team. And then our guys go through adversity. Like the Coast trip was early for us this year. We had some adversity. Those are tough buildings in the U.S. and energized fans. And we came through that with flying colors. We've had a couple trips to Alberta where we faced adversity early and then tough teams and came through that. And you think, you know what? Here we are. We're sitting. No one had us pegged anywhere, and all of a sudden we're three in the country and top the standings. And, you know, what can we do? And we picked up Gorzynski before the Christmas break. We picked up McKegarty before the Christmas break, and those guys made immediate impact. And now the opportunity to pick up Braden Coots, you know, it was really a no-brainer for me. It was just a matter of could we put together the pieces that would make it work for both of us.
It's interesting when you start to really dissect how teams are built, and we're doing that. We're breaking apart the, you know, the Olympic teams in Canada and the U.S., and it looks like the U.S. is sticking to their plan to just put a team on the ice to beat the daylights out of Team Canada in February. I'm wondering how much of the work you're doing behind the scenes has to do with getting past Medicine Hat.
Well, I wouldn't discount anybody ever. You know, the games, it's funny, you watch the World Juniors and there's disappointment, but the margin of error is so tiny.
Yeah.
To win is, you know, the nice thing is a seven-game series. We know Medicine Hat is a good hockey team. You know, we create a little rivalry after last year when they swept us in the second round. It's not lost on us. And they brought back some veterans, and I think Willie's done a tremendous job, him and his scouting staff, after losing some, you know, some high-end players. That being said, Edmonton's got a really good team. You've seen Brandon absolutely surge. Even in Regina, I think they've turned things around. They got things going. We maybe a little lopsided here in PA, but really it was a one-goal game till the end of it the other night with us. So there's really no gimmies. We want to just stay humble. We'll play the opponent in front of us at the time, and what I like about our group is usually it doesn't matter what the score is. We play consistently the same way and are able to stay in the moment, and that gives me a lot of optimism.
Curtis Hunt, he is the general manager of the Prince Albert Raiders, making a blockbuster deal yesterday, joining the Green Zone to give us a breakdown on that. Yesterday, Curtis, on the show, we had a conversation, and we do this every year when we don't get the color medal we want at the World Juniors. We have a conversation about the state of hockey in Canada. One of the things that came up yesterday was, the cost of it, and is it prohibitive for younger families and younger players to get into the game? I'm interested about your thought about the state of Canadian hockey as a whole, based on the chair that you sit in.
Well, I'd rather address that question in the summer. I think the World Juniors are too close, and then things get taken out of context. If I had anything to say, I would say hockey for life. There seems to be more of a focus on the difficult task of getting to the National Hockey League versus, we played hockey. It was a way to get outside, to get exercise, to play a team sport, to be involved in some community, to be trusted, to trust. The support and all the great things that comes with being on a team. And I think sometimes that focus has been lost. And if you go to the rinks, certainly in our town here, we've got what I call the NHL, the Noon Hour Hockey League, and it's a bunch of gray hairs like myself who just love to play. And there's anywhere from, 5 to 8 extra bodies on the bench. Guys go out, they get a sweat, they still compete, and they just love the game. Maybe that would be my thing. Like, let's not lose track of why we play this game, for the love of it, and play until someone tells you that you're not good enough, and then just keep playing, because everybody reaches that point of incompetence at some point. But it doesn't change the fact that when you play hockey, you're part of a team and you're part of a group, and it's a fantastic opportunity to grow and create community.
You know what? Thank you for that. I appreciate that, because I think a part of the problem we have in this country is when we do get a disappointing result like we did at the World Juniors, we tend to overthink it maybe a little bit. So taking it back to why are we playing this game to begin with is an excellent point, Curtis. I really appreciate that. I also think it's worth saying that a lot of the other countries and the other programs around the world are starting to catch up to Canada and the United States as well.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair point. I think North American hockey, and more Canada than the U.S., but there's always been that kind of that grit. That's everywhere now. I think you could see that game always with Finland, if I go back historically, and with Russia. But now it's everywhere. Like that Swedish team this year that did win.
They were tough.
What a blend of speed and skill and grit and hockey sense. And, they were fun to watch. And, even the Czechs, the late push, gave Canada everything they could handle, and like those semifinal games and final games, the saddest thing to me is there's always going to be a loser.
Yeah.
But I just encourage the kids and then people to be proud of themselves, be proud of our group. They go and they represent with pride and class, and it's just a terrific honor to be part of it at any level.
I was very impressed with the kids when they showed up, because there was some body language that I was a little concerned about at the end of that. Not that I was judging them, but I was like, man, are they going to get up for that bronze medal game? Because that's going to be a harder game to play than the gold medal match if they got past Czechia. And they did. I thought they really showed up, and I was impressed. So a lot of character on that team, and congratulations on grabbing one of those kids, Braden Coots.
Well, thank you, Axie. Like I said, we're pretty excited about Braden and what he can bring to our group.
All right. Now, one last question just revolving around the Memorial Cup. Does your planning this year change at all because the Memorial Cup is in the West or no?
Not really. I think, the cards we have put us in a situation, the growth, the maturity of our players, our leadership has put us in this spot. And Braden adds to it. In the end, the only way we'll ever have that opportunity to advance through the rounds is by playing together and by understanding the most important person in the room sits beside me. And with that mentality, I think the sky's the limit for our group. And then, of course, you need breaks, just like I spoke about the margin of error. We were lucky enough to win a championship in 2019, and we had to kill a penalty in overtime in Game 7 in our building, and it's just the way it works. It worked out. We were able to get it killed after they'd scored two power play goals in that game. So you know, your confidence might have been down, but our guys found a way, and that's competitive athletics. And going back to why we play and why we watch and why we're so passionate about it is to be part of those moments or even have the opportunity to be in those moments.
Well put, my friend. Curtis Hunt is the general manager of the Prince Albert Raiders. Good luck this season, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, and Happy New Year to all your listeners.
There he is. And again, keep an eye on the Prince Albert Raiders. They are a wagon this year. I want you to think about this for a second, and you can text in a guess. Don't look it up. Don't Google it. Put your phone away for just a second on that regard. Guess what year the Harlem Globetrotters got started? We'll get into that next with This Day in Sports History. 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
It's up.
Sidney Crosby, the golden goal.
Down goes Frazier.
And after 22 years, Raymond
Moss. Thomas me, I'll be back in time.
Yeah, I know that. You remember?
I gotta get back in time.
On This Day in Sports History, January 7th, 1927, the Harlem Globetrotters played their very first game. It was in Hinckley, Illinois. I used to do a show with a young man, not too young anymore, who was on the half pints. So the little version of the Harlem Globetrotters, the Canadian half pints. He used to tour around and do high schools and elementary schools and do a little thing. Very funny. James P. White. I can't remember what his name was on the bat. They all had nicknames on the basketball team. I can't remember what his was. Gizmo or something like that. Anyway.